Welcome. Welcome, everyone. My name is Kyle Hentz. I am co-founder with John Judge of 9/11 Citizens Watch. And today we're joined by several victim family members and survivors of 9/11, the 9/11 attacks, who you'll be introduced to and hearing from shortly. I welcome you all of here, today to our first press conference at the Press Club, the first of several that we will hold between now and the conclusion of our review of the declassified report that the 9/11 Commission will produce later this year. So what is Citizens Watch? Citizens Watch is an independent, nonpartisan group working to ensure that the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States and other related investigations respond fully to the concerns of both victim families and the public, and B, addresses the questions that remain unanswered about what happened, how and why it happened, and who is ultimately responsible. We launched our group at the first 9/11 Commission hearings in April, almost a year ago. It was held at the Customs House in New York City. Our watchwords are truth, accountability, and transparency. We're here to stand up for the principal rights of Americans to liberty and honest, accountable government. We are far from realizing the ideals of our founders. It is important to note that we don't formally speak for any of the 9/11 survivors or victim family members. We do, however, find ourselves more often than not in supportive of the positions and the questions that they have been putting forward over the last 2 years. We've particularly been impressed with the quality of the work and the questions that have been raised by the 9/11 Family Steering Committee for an independent commission, just a small group of 9/11, mostly widows, who have been monitoring the course of the investigation and had a big hand in creating the commission in the first place. Were it not for their efforts and with the help of many other family members and concerned citizens, there would be no 9/11 commission. And these hearings that are coming tomorrow and Wednesday would not be happening. Family members and survivors are active in a variety of groups and voice a range of concerns and views through independent organizations on issues from the 9/11 memorial to Ground Zero health concerns. And I've just learned from April that there's a newer group that's going to be looking at the charities, the 9/11 charities. Keep an eye on them as well. We're here today to demand answers and accountability for what happened on 9/11 in a process that is open, transparent, and uncompromising. We deserve nothing less. The stakes could not be higher as the world has been swept up in a whirlwind of change and escalating violence since 9/11. Meanwhile, inside the Beltway, business as usual continues. To date, no one in government, not a single government official, has been held directly responsible, accountable for the apparent, as yet unexplained, simultaneous, massive, across-the-board failure of every single defensive and intelligence measure this country had established. And this, despite many warnings that the families and others have detailed in the months since the attacks and years since the attacks. In fact, what we have witnessed is a pattern of stonewalling and slow walking by the White House, the FAA, NORAD, and other agencies. Today, we intend to outline our expectations for the Commission in its final months by presenting just a few of what we feel are the important questions that must be answered to ensure the security of our nation. Through this process, we hope to see the truth emerge and all of those responsible at whatever level are held accountable. So now I'd like to introduce one of my favorite conservative Republicans, Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine is a former Bush 1 official. She was Secretary of Housing under the first Bush administration, and she was Managing Director of Dillon Reed Investment Bank. Catherine?
Thank you. I'd like to thank Kyle and Citizens Watch and everybody participating today for everything you're doing. Kyle spoke about accountability and transparency. Many of the unanswered questions of 9/11 relate to accountability and transparency, both accountability and transparency with respect to what has happened, but also about whether or not 9/11 is being used as a pretext and the response to 9/11 is being used as a pretext to suppress accountability and transparency. And that is the basis of the first question I would like to describe today. Coming into 9/11, the Appropriations Subcommittee for Defense was having a very challenging summer, and that was because over $3.3 trillion of undocumentable adjustments were reported in the process of the Department of Defense refusing to produce audited financial statements. In response to 9/11, the Army used 9/11 as a pretext to say that it could not produce audited financial statements for fiscal 2001. My question relates to national security, not just as it is driven by military and intelligence performance, but by financial performance. The many blessings that all of us in this room enjoy relate very much to the soundness and integrity of our financial arrangements. When the federal government refuses to produce audited financial statements and uses the tragedy of 9/11 as a pretext to not do so, those financial arrangements can be called into question, not just in America, but by creditors and people who use our currency around the world. So my question for all the elected officials of Washington is, where's the $3.3 trillion missing from the Department of Defense and through the Department of Defense at the U.S. Treasury? And what does that say about our securities arrangements and our financial arrangements and how that impacts our financial security? With that, I would like to introduce a second former government official. Michael Springman is a veteran of the State Department. He was with us, with Kyle and me, 2 years ago at our presentation here at the National Press Club. It was an astonishing performance, and it's wonderful to have him back. Michael Springman.
Thank you. I'm Mike Springman. I'm an attorney and a former diplomat. I'm pleased to be here and to ask some awkward and pointed questions. I had been assigned to the CIA's consulate at Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in the late 1980s. I was chief of the visa section. I had been repeatedly ordered by high State Department officials to issue visas to people who frankly did not qualify. They had no ties either to their own country or to Saudi Arabia where they were applying. At the time, I thought this was strange. At the time, I thought this was money going under the table to buy a visa from the American government. I learned later from three good sources, one of whom was Joe Trento, the noted journalist, that these people were being brought to the United States after being recruited by the CIA and its asset, Osama bin Laden. They were brought here for terrorist training and sent back to Afghanistan to fight against the Soviet Union. What I would like to know is the Visa Express program a continuation of this policy in another guise? In Central America, according to Celerino Castillo, the DEA officer, it was standard practice for the CIA to slip its people into a pile of visa applications that were being brought to the American Foreign Service post by a travel agent. And they were simply brought into the country and no questions asked. Well, when I was there, I asked questions about what was going on with these people. Was the Visa Express program a way of getting past awkward questions from people like me and a way of getting past immigration in the United States? We need to know, and I would like the people doing the investigation of September 11th to give us a good, clear, truthful answer as to what was really going on at the time. Thank you.
Now I'm going to just take a minute to set up for our PowerPoint presentation. As each day goes by, we learn that this government knew a whole lot more about these terrorists before September 11th than it has ever admitted. This from former 9/11 Commissioner member Max Cleland, who is no longer with the commission. Now I'd like to invite April Gallup. April and her son were wounded at the Pentagon on September 11th, and she's going to read a brief statement. She's going to introduce herself and read a brief statement from another family member who wanted to have her voice heard here today.
Again, my name is April Dawn Gallup. My son's name is Elijah Gallup, and we are both survivors from the attack on the Pentagon. So where were we? We were inside the building on the E-ring when we experienced one of the most tragic incidents in history. As the plane hit, of course, being on the inside, we had no warning whatsoever that there was even an emergency. There was no alarm. There wasn't anything that went off. When the supposed plane hit the building, fortunately, and I think it's largely why we're here today, we were blown in the blast and then covered under four floors and walls of debris. At the time, where it touches me the most is at the time my son was only 2.5 months old, and it was my first day back from maternity leave, and I was you know, returning into work, and he was also blown in the blast and covered under four floors, walls of debris, along with, you know, everything that was in the building on that day. Personally, I wouldn't want even my worst enemy to suffer or even witness incident. We had the unfortunate ability to actually see how many of the family members died that day. Many died a instant death, but some was very slow and very tragic. Before I go any further on what my questions are, I'm also representing Miss Judith Jackson Rice, who couldn't be here today. She's the mother of Joshua Scott Rice, and he was on the 105th floor of the North Tower. And I'm going to read a part of her statement. My patient has worn thin. Not only has the administration refused to cooperate, but by putting Philip Zeklico on the commission and to appoint him executive secretary shows that the Bush administration has from the first tried to hide, cover up, confuse, and mislead the American public as to what was known and what our security should have on the weeks preceding 9/11. It is time to insist that Mr. Bush, Mr. Cheney, Ms. Rice, and others step up and answer the questions not only of the families so devastated by this lapse in judgment, but in order to show that our system of government is truly of the people, by the people, and for the people. Thank you. And that statement alone is something I'm sure everyone can agree. And my major concern is everything about 911 has been a cover-up and foggish, right down to the charities, right down to the independent commission. We can't get public testimonies. First, there's an agreement for a private testimony. And I want to clarify something. The 911 families have not become angered vigilantes. We just simply want to know the truth behind 911. And we're just simply asking that those key individuals would provide public testimonies to respond to many of the questions.
My name is Jules Aronson. My sister, Myra Aronson, was on American Airlines Flight 11. And I, too, want answers, and hopefully these questions and others to the commission would provide that. So one question is, why didn't foreign intelligence information about planes being used as weapons get into the hands of the National Security Advisor, and why didn't it get into the hands of the president? And that is a really one of the important questions. Thank you.
I'd just like to say that this slide here is a quote, partial quote, from 9/11 Commissioner Jamie Gorelick, who, when she heard the questions posed by Mindy Kleinberg of the 9/11 Family Steering Committee, said that they represented a roadmap for the commission in its work. Many of these questions are drawn from the questions prepared by the 9/11 Family Steering Committee.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Rosemary Dillard. My husband, Eddie A. Dillard, was murdered on board Flight 77. In addition, I was working for American. I have been working for American Airlines for 29 years, and I was directly responsible for the four flight attendants that were murdered that day. So I have a very deep, deep need to know answers. And what I'd like to start with is, before an audience of the American people, the commission must ask President Bush in sworn testimony the following questions. Beginning with the transition period between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration ending on 9/11/01, specifically, what information, either verbal or written, about the terrorist possible attacks and targets did you receive from any source? You know, and included in that, what information was provided to the airlines? I was a manager for the airlines. And how come the airlines didn't know anything about it. This would include briefings from the outgoing Clinton officials, the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, the DOD, and other intelligence agencies. Foreign intelligence, governments, dignitaries, or envoys, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism czar. And after seeing 60 Minutes last night, I'm sure this question remains in all of your hearts. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Abraham Scott. I'm a retired Army officer of 20 years. I lost my wife of 24 years, Janice Marie Scott, in the Pentagon that day. She was a GS-13 supervisor budget analyst. She was in an office that who lost 32 of their 36 employees. They had just moved there less than 2 months prior to the attack, and she left behind two daughters, Crystal, which is she's currently 26, and also Angel Marie, which is 18 years old. There are a lot of questions that I would like to ask the Bush administration, and of course one of them I would like to ask in terms of, as Commander-in-Chief, from May 2001 until September 11, 2001, did you or any agent of the United States government carry out any negotiation or talk with the UBL, an agent of UBL or Al-Qaeda? During that same period, did you or any agent of the United States government carry out any negotiation or talk by any foreign government, its agent or official regarding the UBL? If so, what resulted from those talks? And that's conclude my presentation. Thank you.
Hi, I'm William Rodriguez. I'm the president of the Hispanic Victims Group. I'm the last person to come out of the North Tower and one of the few people that was pulled from under the rubble. On 9/11, I have one of the few master keys that opened all the doors in the building, and I was being followed by the fire department as I went up and opening the doors and getting the people out. I had some problems prior to, after 9/11 with the investigation, the way that it was being done, especially with the FBI, because I gave them a couple of tips, and they didn't actually act up to this point. They haven't acted on any of the tips that I gave them. And as a matter of fact, when I was pulled from the rubble, I have a police radio, and I have to go 8 times, 10 times directly to the office of the FBI to ask them to remove the radio from my possession, because it belonged to probably one of the cops that died on 9/11. And after so much trying, the Port Authority police picked up that radio. So there's been a lot of problems with the investigation. And I want to ask the president that, why haven't you come forward with all the information the commission has requested from you? Why the constant clashes between your office and the panel over access to intelligence and the disponibility of officials? Is anything on the records from NORAD that has been subpoenaed is able to help the panel's investigation? It should be voluntarily turned over without the necessity of a court rule. A follow-up log from the FBI tips before and after 9/11 should be given to the panel. And in conclusion, we the people affected by 9/11 ask you, Mr. President, that in the same way you have used the disaster of our images for political campaign, to be forward and use that information to get to the bottom of what really happened, and in that way we will learn how to avoid and manage the future emergencies that will happen after 9/11. As we know, as Mr. Clark said, they use everything on all the information from 9/11 to shift the concentration into what happened with Iraq, and taking that amount of resources, put it on Iraq instead of Al-Qaeda. So we want that to be open, transparent, and to come forward with all the information that we have requested. Thank you.
I just wanted to clarify, UBL is obviously Osama bin Laden.
Good afternoon. My name is Henry Hughes. I'm the father of Chris Robert Hughes, who was in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. I'm here today to really support the process of accountability. I think there's a lot of questions that have to be answered, and I think people should come forward in both the Bush administration and the Clinton administration and answer the questions. It's a very simple thing. We'd like to know the whole truth and nothing but the truth. We've all heard that many times. When we have our children and we raise them, we teach them to tell the truth, and I would like to think that adults in this situation should be held to the same standard. A very simple thing. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. I think that's not a lot to ask, since this was probably one of the most horrific things that has ever happened to our country, at least in my lifetime. And the question for the President, what connections did our government have with the terrorists prior to 9/11? State Department negotiations with Taliban for the pipeline through Afghanistan, or interaction with the Taliban and or bin Laden, CIA training, and the arming of the terrorists. And like I said, I don't really think it's a lot to ask for the Clinton administration and the Bush administration to come forward and tell the truth. A very simple thing. Thank you.
My question is for President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Ms. Rice, Secretary Rumsfeld, Secretary Powell. Was there a plan in motion to invade Afghanistan and Iraq before 9/11? If so, was access to oil and gas a strategic motivation? And a little background for the reasoning of that question is because there is a lot of assumptions in regards to business involvement, believing that a lot of that motivated a lot of what's going on. And therefore, a direct answer to the question would alleviate a number of assumptions.
Well, this question concerns foreign state sponsors of terrorism. Now, why did Mohammed Ahmed, director of Pakistan's Secret Service, order Saeed Shaikita to wire $100,000 to hijacker Mohammed Atta? And yes, well, why indeed? And what was Mohammed Ahmed's relationship with Al-Qaeda? And indeed, what was the nature of Ahmed's meetings with Powell, Tenet, Armitage, represented Porter Gross and others just before 9/11.
Well, as we continue on, my question is for Mrs. Rice, who is refusing sworn public testimony. Prior to September 11th, what information did the intelligence community provide to the National Security Council on Al-Qaeda activities and infrastructure inside the United States? Prior to September 11th, did the National Security Council ever consider alerting the American people to the internal threat from Al-Qaeda? What happened? Did the National Security Council ever consider enhancing the U.S. border controls by strengthening the watch list programs, alerting the FAA or the airlines, or inspecting cargo containers on a larger scale? If so, what happened?
Well, the question will be posted at 9/11citizenswatch.org, 9/11independentcommission.org. These are far from a comprehensive listing of questions and areas of inquiry. There are other areas of questioning not raised here, but that need to be addressed, including the Amtrak attacks and the collapse of World Trade Center buildings, among others.
My question of President Bush is, if he was here as the Commander-in-Chief, the family members of the Pentagon and American Airlines Flight 77 was in the assistance center in the Sheraton Hotel in Crystal City for almost 4 months, and President Bush, as the Commander-in-Chief, did not have the gall to come over to the Sheraton and express his personal condolences to the family members in that hotel. And as a veteran, I can attest that at least 90% of the 125 victims of the Pentagon were either directly or indirectly related to the military. and I found that very appalled in terms of him as the commander-in-chief not coming over there and expressing his personal condolences to the family member. The other question?
Just one more by John.
Okay.
Just trying to move quickly here. I'd just like to invite co-founder of 9/11 Citizens Watch, John Judge, to ask a final question before we look at some of the resources where we have begun to find some of the answers and that we have passed on to the 9/11 Commission. John Judge.
The specific question that I wanted to raise, and this is based on a lot of work that we have done as independent investigators and researchers on the case, and all of our material has been turned over to the Commission, along with questions like this that we've been raising consistently at every one of the hearings. Given the fact that there were multiple prior warnings from foreign intelligence to U.S. intelligence, and given the fact that there were reported forewarnings, specific forewarnings, to government officials, Pentagon officials, the mayor of San Francisco, and others not to fly on 911, and given the fact that there was enough consciousness of the possibility of planes attacking buildings, that special precautions were made in the summer before at the Genoa summit, special drills were conducted at the Pentagon for such a situation. The security had told me in 1999 that they had cameras and radar on the roof in case they, meaning Muslims that he was speaking to me about, tried to run a plane into the building. Why was there no even standard, much less emergency, response in the nearly hour-long scenario from the time that the first plane evidenced either hijacking or some trouble in the air? Why was there no military response, NORAD, FAA response, or other response from defenses within P-56 or the restricted areas in the Pentagon on 9/11? Why didn't the warnings and the preparations and the drills lead to a response that day?
Now I'd like to identify several resources that people have brought forward to our attention and that we have in turn passed on to the 9/11 Commission. The first two have been entered into the formal record or archive of the 9/11 Commission, and I've spoken to members of the Commission who have actually used the timeline in this case as a resource in their work. This is a timeline that's been developed by a gentleman named Paul Thompson and many colleagues from across the country and around the world. It's available at www.cooperativeresearch.org. The War on Freedom by Nafees M. Ahmed from the Institute for Policy Research and Development. This was a book that was published over a year ago. It's being published overseas. I understand it's virtually a bestseller, coastal bestseller in Italy. This book, too, has been given to each member of the commission. Tomorrow, Citizens Watch will formally present copies of The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11. This book was written by an eminent theologian and teacher, philosophy teacher, named David Ray Griffin. The foreword was written by Richard Falk, professor emeritus from Princeton University, who was quoted, "This is an extraordinary book. It is rare indeed that a book has this potential to become a force of history." So thank you for being here, for coming, and for listening. I'm sorry this ran as long as it did. I wanted to have more time for questions. But we hope you'll join us to ensure that we see full accountability, transparency with this commission, and sworn public testimony from top officials, from the president on down. And we are also here calling publicly for the resignation of the commission's executive director, Dr. Philip Zelikow. He has gross conflicts of interest, or at least appearance of such, in his close ties with Ms. Rice, National Security Advisor of President Bush. They've co-authored a book. He was also part of the transition team. Now, the commission, in all fairness, has recused him, or he's recused himself, from issues dealing with the transition team, which is the transition between the Clinton and Bush administration. However, he sat in on meetings with Richard Clark, in which the threat of al-Qaeda was clearly elucidated for the members of that security team, national security team, in the process of transitioning from one to the other. When the members of the 9/11 Family Steering Committee heard that he was in this meeting, they immediately called for his resignation. He has given testimony in his own investigation. We find this outrageous, and we believe that the very integrity of the commission is at stake here, and that he should resign immediately. So
I want to thank each and every member, family member, and survivor of 9/11 who've come here and shared their stories, read some of the questions that we prepared, that we drew from the 9/11 Family Steering Committee, and added some of their own. We all deserve the truth. They deserve the truth. We all deserve the truth. The future and our security is at stake here.